at kpfk.org.
ICE is escalating deportation operations around the Los Angeles area. But if you are stopped by ICE officers, you have constitutional rights, regardless of your immigration status. If you or someone you know has been detained or wants to report ICE, more information is available at CIRLA at 888-624-4752 for legal help and resources. It is bilingual. More information at CHIRLA.org.
Listen to KPFK 90.7 FM, Los Angeles, 98.7 Santa Barbara.
Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up.
Well, good afternoon, friends. Good afternoon. Welcome to this week's edition of the Lawyers Guild Show. I'm Jim Lafferty, along with my co-host and dear friend, Maria Hall. Maria, let our listeners know what we have on store for them today.
All right. Well, today we'll be focused on free speech. In our first half hour, we'll speak with media expert Jeff Cohen about the Trump administration's war on prominent comedians. And in our second segment, we'll be joined by LA progressive publisher Sharon Kyle to talk about the government officials who are in the administration's crosshairs. And of course, Jim, as you know, it is KPFK's fund drive time. So we just want to remind listeners to go ahead and go to kpfk.org and make your donation, and then we won't have to talk about it as much.
That's right. We're only going to spend about 5, 6, 7 minutes during the whole show today talking about the fund drive. It's not that it's only important enough to be worth 5 or 10 minutes, but because we know how important all the news is of the day and all the topics are of the day and how vitally important it is that this station bring you all that's going on, so much is going on a daily basis. So we're counting on you, therefore, not to have to have us haranguing you for the 20 minutes or so that we used to harangue you during fund drives. We like to think that you appreciate what we're doing, you appreciate our need for your support, that you will indeed, during the course of the show, give us a call at 818-985-5735, or go to the website. Lots of ways we say thank you when you do. We like to think our programming here is thanks enough. But on top of that, we add some icing on the cake, if you will, and we have all sorts of premiums and ways in which we send you back a thank you gift when you do make a donation. So 818-985-5735 is the number to call. A little later in the show, we'll talk to you about a wonderful one that I think I'm going to get, having to do with Joni Mitchell. But we'll talk more about that a little later in the show. So for fans of Joni Mitchell, stay tuned. All right, let's take our first topic, Maria.
All right. Well, as the Trump administration seeks to expand presidential authority, it's not surprising that the First Amendment is making headlines. It was enacted way back in 1791 to protect our fundamental freedoms like free speech and a free press, and it serves as a safeguard against potential abuses of government power, including censorship and other efforts to stifle dissent. Well, Trump and his allies have made no secret about their intention to silence prominent comedians who have been critical of the administration. For example, on July 17th, CBS announced the cancellation of The Late Show with Stephen Colbert, a move that Trump publicly applauded, adding that Jimmy Kimmel would be next. Within days, the FCC approved a merger involving CBS's parent company, Paramount. Then, on September 17th, FCC Chair Brendan Carr warned that if Disney did not suspend Jimmy Kimmel for making comments about MAGA and Charlie Kirk, the FCC could get involved with ABC's licensing. Disney immediately took Jimmy Kimmel Live off the air. And even though the show has started back up again as of September 23rd, many ABC affiliates are still refusing to air it. And by the way, Trump has warned that Jimmy Fallon and Seth Meyers at NBC will be the next to go. To help us understand what's happening, we're so fortunate to welcome back to the show our friend, journalist, media critic, lecturer, former ACLU lawyer, and so much more, Jeff Cohen. Jeff co-founded Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, or FAIR, the National Media Watchdog Group, and co-founded the online activism group RootsAction.org. He's co-produced documentary films and written several books on media bias, censorship, and freedom of speech. He was also a paid on-air contributor on all three major cable news networks. Of course, he's not getting paid today except with Goodwill. So today we'll be particularly focused on his most recent article in Salon called "Kimmel's Suspension Shows Media Censorship is a Structural Problem." Jeff Cohen, welcome back to the Lawyers Guild Show.
Hey, it's great to be with you on the Lawyers Guild Show. I've been a fan of the Guild my whole adult life. I went to the People's College of Law in Los Angeles. That the Guild played a huge role in starting. And when I was a law student and briefly practiced law, I was a very, very proud Guild member.
Absolutely.
Well, let's go ahead and get started with the basics. Can you remind listeners, it's sort of fresh in our memory, but what exactly did Jimmy Kimmel do that prompted such a dramatic turn of events?
Well, I think what really happened was Kimmel, night after night, was criticizing the president and often showing what the president said. He was doing the kind of thing you'd hope would be on TV news. And the particular night was after the horrific assassination of Charlie Kirk, and he made a comment about how the MAGA people were exploiting that assassination. He referred to the accused assassin, who there wasn't as much information then, and he was a little vague in that, and he was probably a little off accurately. But frankly, the reason he was censored is not because of what he said that night. It's what he's done for years in the Trump era.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about the ABC affiliate stations, though, that are still refusing. Apparently, as many as 20% of them are still refusing to carry Jimmy Kimmel live. I understand, though, that Nexstar and Sinclair, owners of a lot of these stations, were a driving force behind getting him suspended in the first place. I also understand Nexstar needs the FCC approval for a $6 billion merger. So before we talk about that merger, though, Jeff, please tell us, who are these companies and how have they amassed the power to push around a media giant like Disney?
These are companies that have so much media power that they should not have, except for political corruption in Washington. For decades, it was a rule at the FCC that one individual, one company, could only own seven TV stations, seven AM, seven FM radio stations across the country. During the Reagan era, it was loosened to 12, 12, 12, but you still could only own one TV station in a single market. Comes along 1990s, the mid-90s, and Bill Clinton is the corporate Democratic president. Newt Gingrich is the corporate Republican Speaker of the House. Working hand in glove, they shoved through the biggest reform of media law since the 1930s. I'm talking 1996 Telecommunications Act. And it was a corrupt law. You know, both parties are getting funded by these companies. The corporate lobbyists for these companies write the law. And they basically divvied up the turf and allowed all of them to get bigger. Mm-hmm. So Rupert Murdoch was able to build the Fox empire thanks to that law. It was already big. It got bigger. He started Fox News Channel that year, 1996. Mm-hmm. Clear Channel, right-wing radio company in Texas, allied with George W. Bush. They owned 50 radio stations before the act. And within a couple of years, they own 1,200 stations. Now they're called iHeartMedia. And those two companies that you mentioned, Nexstar and Sinclair. Sinclair, by the way, is the most Trump-oriented television company in the world. You know, there's nothing quite, it's been right-wing since they intervened against John Kerry in the Kerry versus Bush 2004 election. But those two companies, which prior to the Telecommunications Act could only own 12 stations, they now own and operate 200 stations each. Hmm. And that includes 66 ABC affiliates. Hmm. And the good news is that the Jimmy Kimmel monologue from last night, which could not be seen in 25% of the country, on YouTube, it's more than 15 million views today. And I'm seeing comments, I couldn't watch this in New Orleans last night. I couldn't watch this in Nashville. So there's great comments. And that's the next battle now that Kimmel has been returned to the airwaves because of activism. I mean, there were protests in Hollywood at the Jimmy Kimmel studio. There were online protests. There were consumer boycotts of Disney Plus subscriptions. People were turning them in. Hulu, they were ending their subscriptions to these Disney companies. And then all the celebrities in Hollywood, Meryl Streep, Natalie Portman, Jennifer Aniston, Tom Hanks, they all signed the ACLU letter. It was an incredible movement that organized in a few days. And now we need that to happen in all these cities that are still refusing to air Jimmy Kimmel. And, you know, they're scrambling. When you lose an hour of show, you know, I've been trying to study what happened today, what happened last night. On one station, they ran like an hour of news. They were just filling time. On another station, it was like an hour of weather about the bad weather that would be coming. But, you know, it's utterly ridiculous. And the censorship is really scary.
Oh, my gosh. It makes me think like, yeah, what happens when Jim and I are, you know, if our guest doesn't show up, then we just kind of talk. No, I don't think that's ever happened. Well, let's talk a little bit more about the stakes here. So this merger that Nexstar wants to do, I understand they need FCC approval, actually not just approval, actually some kind of a waiver to make them even allowed to be bigger than even what's currently allowed. Talk about that, about what kind of market share Nexstar would enjoy. It sounds like they're already huge if this merger goes through.
Yeah, they already own 200 TV stations across the country that used to be illegal, so does Sinclair. Nexstar is trying to merge with a company called Tegna. They need the FCC's approval for the merger, and they need the current 39% cap. Your TV stations can only reach 39% of all U.S. households. They want that changed to 80%. Brendan Carr, the Trump-oriented FCC chair who made the threats, you know, he's been goading these ABC stations not to run Kimmel. It's never happened in the history of the FCC. But Brendan Carr has basically said he's looking very positively toward allowing these two companies to get even bigger. And, you know, I was trying to figure out, and they're saying that Nexstar is in negotiations with Disney. They might want to bring Kimmel back. What's fascinating is they say, well, we want to make sure that there's changes, Nexstar says. The other day they said they want to make sure that Kimmel is fostering an environment of respectful dialogue. It's utterly ridiculous. They're making peace with and aiding President Trump, who's abusive, name-calling. There's nothing, respectful dialogue and the words Trump have never been in the same sentence. But they want, obviously, to tone down Kimmel. Kimmel's not going to be toned down. So it's going to be interesting to see if Nexstar folds. But I think there should be some real political action against Nexstar by the activists who live in those cities and weren't able to see Kimmel. That includes Washington, D.C., Seattle, Portland, Oregon, St. Louis.
That's right. My goodness. Well, let's talk about self-censorship. You know, when someone complies with what they think the government wants them not to say, or say, I suppose, too, but mainly not say. For example, Disney was not under any official order, was it, from the FCC to pull Jimmy Kimmel? At what point, therefore, does self-censorship in the media become really complicity, I guess, in authoritarianism?
Yeah, I have a mathematical formula, First Amendment math.
Uh-huh.
Donald Trump plus media conglomeration equals censorship.
Yeah.
If you work at these places, you know what's expected, especially if you're a journalist. The beauty of the comedians is they're given more leeway. You can learn more from a 10-minute monologue from these comedians, whether it's Colbert, who's unfortunately going to be terminated by Paramount, Kimmel, who was suspended by Disney. The Daily Show is also Paramount. They probably won't be on the air beyond May of next year. The great investigative journalist slash comic John Oliver on HBO. Yes, yeah. He may not be around much longer because of changes in ownership there. So, yeah, if you work at one of these places, especially if you're a journalist, it's much worse for you if you're a journalist than a comedian. I worked at MSNBC in the run-up to the invasion of Iraq. We were censored by management. They didn't want us putting people questioning whether the invasion was wise. We know this because internal documents leaked out. We were terminated at the Phil Donahue show 3 weeks before the invasion of Iraq. Anyone who works for these conglomerates knows to engage in self-censorship if you want your career to flourish. Mm-hmm. These are strict corporate hierarchies. If you want to promote upward, you just don't rock the boat. At CBS News, where, you know, Paramount needed FCC approval to merge with Skydance, which is pushing CBS News to the right openly. They're saying this openly. But the guy who headed 60 Minutes, the executive producer, Bill Owens, he resigned in protest because Paramount kept meddling in his content. It wasn't because Trump ordered Paramount to meddle. Paramount needed something from the government, and they meddled. And the head of 60 Minutes, the most profitable news show in history, had to leave. He left in protest. So all of these places are getting squeezed. ABC News, before Disney pulled this stunt with Kimmel, ABC News paid Trump $16 million in a thinly disguised bribe to settle a lawsuit, a defamation lawsuit. You know how hard it is to win a defamation lawsuit, especially against a public figure, you know, if you're talking about a public figure named President Donald Trump. So they paid off Trump, and everyone at ABC News bristled as they got sold out. And that's the problem, that these corporations, they don't care about journalism. They don't care about the right to dissent or freedom of expression. All they care about is profit maximization. And to get bigger and bigger, they always want the rules loosened. They want antitrust laws ignored. And that's what's been happening now for about 40 years.
Well, last week, Trump suggested that any TV stations that allow criticism of him should lose their FCC licenses. And of course, we're being aired right now, not over a TV station, but the public radio waves. When we have a time-honored tradition of criticizing the government, regardless of who is in power. And yes, sometimes that's very unpopular. So why is it so critical to maintain platforms for different viewpoints, even those that may be unpopular?
Well, when I moved to Los Angeles to attend the People's College of Law, I'd never heard of Pacifica or KPFK. It changed my life to be able to be driving in your car in a traffic jam, and have Pacifica, KPFK on the air was mind blowing to me. Mm-hmm. I'd come from places that didn't have Pacifica. So it's crucial. Pacifica's got this long history of dissent, and the nonprofit airwaves is where you're getting the hard news and the diversity of perspectives and the serious critics of Trump and Trumpism and corporatism. Because remember, the Democrats and the Republicans work together to hand the media to a few companies. On KPFK, you'll see criticisms, hear criticisms of both. So my advice to people listening to this show is KPFK doesn't have an ad budget. All they have is you. You're their sponsors. So you have to donate to KPFK. You have to get your friends, relatives, neighbors to start listening to KPFK. I mean, LA Progressive, you know, I get LA Progressive every morning. That's another one.
Yes.
The beauty of, I taught at Ithaca College independent media for 10 years. independent media is booming because a lot of people don't trust the corporate conglomerated news. Mm-hmm. And there was a big blow to mainstream news when they got the Iraq invasion totally wrong, when they accepted all these lies coming from Bush Cheney, and they lost a lot of viewership, readership. And so there's been a migration to independent nonprofit news outlets. That's got to continue. Yes, will licenses be challenged? Probably, but you'll get good lawyers and you'll stop them. You'll save your license. But I mean, if you add up all of the independents from community radio, Pacifica Radio, all of the podcasts, Hassan Piker, the great advocate for Palestinian rights, millions of people on his podcast, The Young Turks, LA Progressive, Counterpunch, Common Dreams, Truth Out, Truth Dig, Sheer Post. Did I mention The Young Turks, Democracy Now? Add it all up. And for the first time in history, millions of people have access, not only every day, but sometimes every hour or two, to non-corporate news. We didn't have that even when there was a huge socialist press before World War I, which was smashed in the wake of World War I. And even in the late 60s, early 70s, with the New Left underground newspapers, Alternative, they came out once a week. So we have something really that's crucial to fight for. And, you know, at FAIR.org, the Media Watch group that I founded back in 1986, during the Reagan era, when there were all these threats of nuclear war, because Reagan was a little unhinged in those first years, we used to have a slogan, better media active than radioactive. Mm-hmm. If you're a progressive activist, whether your issue is racial justice, war, immigrants' rights, your second issue should be media. You have to fight to defend nonprofit media. And I know you're in a fund drive. By the way, I donate to KPFK, even though I'm only there 3 months a year. And everyone should.
Oh, well, my goodness. Jeff Cohn, thank you so very much. Maria, your last thoughts as we have to say goodbye to Jeff, I guess, sadly.
Oh, well, yes, we have a couple minutes. But yes, I did want to ask you so many questions, but let me get this one in. Do you think, looking ahead at, you know, the midterm elections, the next presidential election, do you think this feud over, you know, maybe Jimmy Kimmel, maybe Seth Meyers, whoever is next, do you think it's going to kind of die out quickly, or is it going to really escalate towards the midterm elections?
I think the Trump team is going to do everything they can to get rid of these voices. I think they're thrilled that Paramount, with their new right-wing management, they've gotten rid of Colbert as of May, if he makes it that far. The Daily Show will probably end in May. Jimmy Kimmel's contract is up in May. They want to get rid of Seth Meyers. Again, Trump boasts about this. We've never had this in history where a president or an FCC chair says, we're going after your licenses because we don't like your content. It's never happened in the history of the FCC. So, yeah, they understand, they're gerrymandering, their voter suppression, that part of their effort to defeat Democrats in 2026 November election is to clean out the media dissent. And that's why this is a very scary time. But we should be optimistic. The movement to save Kimmel, and there'll be a movement if they come after KPFK, but the movement to save Kimmel was huge. And it was spontaneous. And it was people that weren't going to take it. So, I mean, the activism that's going on, whether it's the No Kings March, there's all sorts of activism. We've got, you know, obviously Trump has got to be defeated in 2026, or there may not be a presidential election in 2028.
Yeah. All right. Well, before we do have to let you go and do some business here, where can our listeners read more about you and your work? How can they follow what you do?
With Norman Solomon, I've started the Peace and Justice Activism Group that many people in LA know about. It's called rootsaction.org, rootsaction, one word. FAIR.org, if you want to do media activism, just give them your email and start getting their email blasts. And then my work is all at jeffcohen.org.
All right. Well, Jeff Cohn, thank you so much. Thank you so much for reminding our listeners of why they need this show. You're certainly a wonderful example of it, as your testimony and your talk today has been. So we thank you for it. Thank you very much, Jeff.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you, Maria.
All right, let's do it. Jeff summed it up better than I can, but you heard what he had to say about why this station is so important, why stations like this all over the country are so important. There's precious few of us here in Pacifica Radio. There are 100 stations or so that pick up some of our shows, but otherwise there's just five main Pacifica stations. Here in LA, it's KPFK. That's all there is. We don't do commercials. We only take underwriting from places like the Symphony or the Red Cross or someplace that is not a commercial establishment. No, the only money we get that pays the electric bill, that pays the salary of our underpaid employees, is what you contribute to this station. You are a part of this station for real. You're not just providing us with a chance to give our employees big raises or drive company cars. No, you're what keeps us on the air, quite literally. Our employees are so dedicated that they work for a lot less than they could make at other places of employment. And we are, as I think Jeff was suggesting, we are really the voice of the movement. We're really the voice of the movement. The movement has no radio stations of its own. It has KPFK in Los Angeles, and it has other outlets like Roots Action and what have you all over the place. But if you want to talk about radio 24/7, you have KPFK. And then the discussion ends. And that's threatened. We know what's happened to public radio in this country. We know the threats that it's under. So it becomes critically important that when we have these fund drives, and we don't take much of the hour now to do it, but that you respond, that you call us at 818-985-5735. You'll feel better when you do. We'll sure feel a heck of a lot better when you do. Maria? Uh-oh, you're silenced, Maria. You've silenced yourself.
Sorry, on mute. Yeah, that doesn't work for radio. Yes. So I wanted to point out too, I was speaking with Jeff earlier and he pointed out, he reminded me, I forgot this, that FCC Chair Brendan Carr actually wrote the section in Project 2025 on media, and you know, Pacifica was mentioned as well.
Yes.
I guess they don't realize that Pacifica doesn't get government money. But, you know, anyway, they're going to find out eventually.
No, that's a good point. The Project 2025, which is so much of what Trump is doing in his administration, specifically mentions this radio network, this little radio network, and of which KPFK is the LA affiliate, as something that to be gotten rid of. So we really do, we are going to count on you if they come against us in that way. But we won't even be here to be fighting for ourselves if you don't support us in the meanwhile by giving a contribution. You know, you get one of for $65, you can get one of those wonderful T-shirts that have been designed. You can, for $50, you can get a grocery bag. I mentioned earlier something that I've got my eye on because I'm a big Joni Mitchell fan. There is a 3D set. It's really the ultimate Joni Mitchell collection for $130.
Wow.
It costs you damn near that much where you figure out driving and gas and getting to someplace to buy it in the record store if you could find it there. This is something that's kind of special to KPFK. We appreciate that we have it. It's a 3D set of Joni Mitchell, and it's all you need of Joni Mitchell to really appreciate her wonderful contribution to music in this country for a $130 donation. So maybe you want to get that, whatever it is. Maybe you just want to pay $25 to become a member, period. Fine. We'd love it. Maybe you're listening and you're out of work right now and you can't afford anything. That's okay. Keep listening. Keep listening. No hard feelings. We just feel bad that you're out of work. But we know there's some people out there that are doing quite well at their place of work or wherever. Maybe you can make a donation on behalf of all those people that are out of work, that are listening to the station and just can't afford to do what they would love to do, which is to help keep the station on the air. So 818-985-5735, or as Maria often likes to say, just go right to the website, right, Maria?
Correct, kpfk.org, and then you can see the thank you gifts and actually pick one out. Even $5, you can get a sticker, and so that shows the world, hey, I love KPFK.
Right.
So, I think it may be time to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back with an interview with our friend, LA Progressive Publisher, and that was one of the great media sources that Jeff Cohen just mentioned, Sharon Kyle. So let's go ahead and take a quick, very quick break, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles and streaming across the globe at kpfk.org. Radio powered by the people.
We are back with you. That was a short break. We're glad to be back with you, my friends. You're still listening to the Lawyers Guild Show. I'm still Jim Lafferty, and still with my friend and co-host Maria Hall. And now we do have that wonderful section where we talked to you about from the publisher of the LA Progressive. Jeff Cohen paid tribute to it in his half hour with us. Sharon Kyle is the publisher of the LA Progressive. She's written a couple of fine articles recently about racism in American life in the publication in recent days. One of them, actually written at the end of August, I think, is entitled Lisa Cook as Low-Hanging Fruit. And there's quotes around low-hanging fruit. The full title is Lisa Cook as Low-Hanging Fruit While Jerome Powell is a Bridge Too Far. She maintains that when political commentators and the corporate media describe Cook as low-hanging fruit, they expose really the racism in American life and politics. Well, we're going to ask her about that and find out what she means. So we've invited Sharon Kyle to be our guest today to explain her claim about racism in connection with Trump's efforts to get rid of Cook. Well, on the vitally important Federal Reserve Board, replace her with someone who would, of course, well, do his bidding. Sharon Kyle is not only the publisher, I should mention, of the LA Progressive, a must-read, friends, a must-read every morning online daily newsletter for all the serious political thinkers and activists around LA. We all read it. She is also the former president of the People's College of Law. I didn't know that. Jeff Cohen mentioned that he was a graduate of the People's College of Law. And that was a law school started in part by the National Lawyers Guild, as well as a few other bar associations. She's a former member of the board of directors of the ACLU affiliate of Southern California, and is on the editorial board of theblackcommentator.com. Well, Sharon Kyle, a warm welcome to the Lawyers Guild Show, my friend.
Thank you so much, Jim. It's a pleasure to be here with you and Maria again. I so enjoy our conversation. So thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well, Sharon, first of all, remind our audience, what is the Federal Reserve Board?
Okay.
So important.
Yeah, so we've got a lot to talk about. So I'm just going to head straight in. So the Federal Reserve is a system that was established in 1913 through an act of Congress to provide a way to stabilize the United States financial system. It's a lender of last resort. It establishes monetary policy. And its real reason for existing is to insulate monetary policy from day-to-day politics.
Aha. Mm-hmm.
Well, Sharon, it's no secret that Trump has wanted to get rid of Jerome Powell, the chair of the Federal Reserve Board of Governors, and replace him with someone who will more follow the party line on things like setting interest rates. Why has Trump not been able to do that?
So Trump obviously does a lot of stuff that we've never seen a president do before. And this is one of them. He really wants to blur the lines between day-to-day politics and monetary policy, because clearly he has something. This would be a huge benefit to him if he was able to establish what interest rates would be and was able to weigh in on other monetary policy decisions. But he hasn't been able to get rid of Jerome Powell as easily as he wants, because of the act itself, which is called the Federal Reserve Act of 1913. And so one of the things, there's actually four factors that stop him from being able to just get rid of Jerome Powell and put in one of his own cronies. First, the purpose of the Federal Reserve is to remain independent of politics and to insulate monetary policy from day-to-day politics. The second is when a Federal Reserve governor is confirmed by the Senate, they have defined periods of time that they are to serve on the Federal Reserve Board. And they are 14-year periods. And the chair of the Federal Reserve is also a member of the Board of Governors, but they have a separate four-year term as chair, but they're still a Federal Reserve governor. So both Lisa Cook and Jerome Powell are Federal Reserve Board, belong on the Federal Reserve Board of Governors. But Powell has the extra hat of being the chair. And there are limits on how they can be removed. The law says that the Federal Reserve governors, including the chair, can only be removed for cause. And that means actual, real, serious misconduct or incapacity. Incapacity meaning they no longer have the capacity to do the job. You know, maybe they had a head injury or, you know, something like that happened, but not a policy disagreement. So the courts have historically interpreted for cause as a very high bar, and it protects the Fed from political retaliation. And then finally, even if Trump were able to just willy-nilly swap out Federal Reserve governors, they have to be confirmed by the Senate. They have to go through a Senate confirmation process. Any new Federal Reserve governor coming in must get the stamp of approval from the Senate. So that's why Trump can't just pull Powell out.
Yeah. It's to protect the independence, if you will, which is so important to maintaining the economic system in this country without the undue political influence of whoever might be president at the time. Thank you for that. I wonder, not being able to get rid of Powell then, Sharon, you argue that Trump is now going after, well, Lisa Cook, for example, because she is, as the corporate media puts it, low-hanging fruit. Besides her race, is it not also the case that she's low-hanging fruit, quote-unquote, in part, at least because she has no real political clout? She doesn't have a base among the Republican Party. Talk to us about the various reasons why Lisa Cook would be a target of him. And there's also, of course, that claim about some kind of mortgage fraud, isn't there?
Right. So let's just go directly into the reason that Trump is saying that Lisa Cook should be removed. And there is an accusation that he put out there of mortgage fraud. And that's based on her filings and representations around properties that she's owned before she joined the Fed. Okay. Mm-hmm. So the Trump administration is pointing to a process, a document called a criminal referral. And this criminal referral was prepared by and submitted by William Polt, who is the director of the Federal Housing and Finance Agency, FHFA. And he claims that Cook claimed two different properties as her primary residence in 2021 in mortgage documents. The accusation suggests that by claiming both homes as her primary residence, she might have secured better mortgage terms, lower interest rates, or lower down payment than if one had been classified as a secondary home or rental property. Trump's legal team argues that this conduct calls into question Cook's trustworthiness and her fitness to serve on the Fed board, and even though it predates her service as a governor. And some of the alleged discrepancies come from mortgage applications. And when I first started hearing about this, I wondered, obviously, a president of the United States does not have time to be reviewing mortgage applications. What's going on here?
Yeah.
So it turns out William Pulte, who is the director of Federal Housing and Finance Agency, he's been really scrutinizing these mortgage applications dating back several years, because this is 4 years ago that she submitted this application. In other documents, she clearly states that this is a secondary home, that it's a vacation home or that it's a rental. She states that. And from various articles that I've read, this matter of not identifying the property but identifying the property as a primary residence, it was a matter of checking off a box. Now, I don't know how many of you, your listeners, or whether Maria, you or Jim have ever had a real estate dealing. I have. And the number of documents. So if you could very easily check the wrong box.
Oh, yeah.
She did not get preferential or lower interest rates. She did not get better mortgage terms. And she clearly stated in other documents that this was a rental. Mm-hmm. So what's going on here? Well, as I've already stated, it was me listening to various talking heads describing her as low-hanging fruit that made me look into this so that I could write the article. And the reason that I'm so interested in this language that's used is I was actually listening to people who consider themselves on the left, who consider themselves progressive. And they're identifying her as low-hanging fruit, which to me, through seeing that through the lens as a Black woman, and also seeing that Donald Trump almost on his first week, or it was his first week as president, one of the first things he did was he signed Executive Order 14151, ending DEI programs across the federal government.
Right.
He ordered the Office of Personnel Management to issue memos instructing agencies to close all DEI offices and to terminate all DEI contracts. There's been a variety of attacks that the Trump administration and his minions have had on politicians of color. What comes to mind for me is the treatment of Alex Padilla when he was just a senator, United States senator, who identified himself as such. He's thrown to the floor, handcuffed, roughed up, manhandled. The mayor of Newark, New Jersey, Ross Baraka, he himself, who was standing outside of an ICE detention facility, he was also arrested and roughed up. And Ross Baraka happens to be a Black man, but he's the mayor of Newark. He's in Newark. LaMonica McIver, who was also in New Jersey, along with Bonnie Watson Coleman, also in New Jersey at the time that this attack from ICE agents on Ross Baraka occurred, they too were roughed up, arrested. So I'm looking at this, and there's several examples. And then listening to these left-leaning talking heads describe her as low-hanging fruit. And in my mind, that's an admittance that you understand that she's actually more vulnerable than Jerome Powell. Now, we've just talked about the legal protections of Federal Reserve Board governors, legal protections against, she's protected in the same way that Jerome Powell is protected. Yet, Trump actually attempted to fire her. He said she was fired. A lower court issued a preliminary injunction and stopped her firing. She could have said, oh, well, the president just fired me, and she could have just gone on home. He made no attempts to fire Jerome Powell, and they both have the same power. So what is it that she's low-hanging fruit and Jerome Powell is a bridge too far? So my investigation revealed several factors that led me to believe that that Lisa Cook is low-hanging fruit, both from the perspective of many on the left and the right. And the standard for cause removal was not observed with Lisa Cook. And here are some of the reasons that I have found that perhaps the Trump administration felt they had the freedom to just willy-nilly get rid of her. The first thing to look at is the confirmation hearings. Both Powell and Cook had to be confirmed through Senate confirmation hearings in order to operate as Federal Reserve Board governors. Powell, who is the chair, he was reconfirmed in 2022 with a blowout bipartisan vote, 80-19. Democrats and many Republicans publicly vouched for him. Cook scraped by on a party line margin, 51-50.
Wow.
With the breaking vote being the Vice President, Kamala Harris. That's how close it was for Cook. So why would it be that close for Cook? What are her credentials? I mean, why is it that the Senate just overwhelmingly voted for Powell and not for Cook? Well, let's listen to Cook's credentials. Got a PhD from UC Berkeley. She served as a faculty member of Harvard and Michigan State. She had service on the White House Council of Economic Advisors. So she was already an economic advisor to the White House. She has extensive work advising governments and international institutions. So her credentials, according to many of the outlets where I gleaned information about her, her credentials actually are stronger than Powell's. But what she doesn't have is the same kind of network, the same kind of connections. And I could really feel for that because I'm now here, I'm just seeing through the lens of a woman, a Black woman, I myself who have traveled in some circles where I'm the only Black woman, and I'm working with a lot of white men, and we have official meetings, and then there are other meetings that aren't official. Mm-hmm. So, you go to lunch together, or, you have coffee in the morning, the meeting before the meeting. And I could see how, maybe she's not included in some of these meetings. And maybe that explains why she doesn't have the kind of network that that Powell has. So I'm going to stop here. And I know you guys have a series of questions. Why don't you go ahead and ask the next question and we can delve deeper.
Well, you're so engaging to listen to. Yeah, we don't want to interrupt your flow. But I did want to go into a little bit, if maybe listeners don't know that Lisa Cook is the first Black woman to ever serve on the Federal Reserve Board. We may have mentioned it, I can't remember, but just to put that into context. So why do you claim that race in your article, that makes Trump see her as vulnerable?
Right. So I began to talk about how, yes, she is the first Black woman. And what that has translated into, because she is the first, is that she had fewer entrenched allies in financial institutions. And Trump can count on less establishment pushback if he targets her. And this is something that's so fascinating to me because I've seen it in operation. I actually am doing a series of articles about what I call the foothold, where opportunists can gain a foothold in a particular area if they use the racial hierarchy. So if the person that they are attacking, in order for them to gain a foothold in a particular industry, if that person or that position is typically held by a Black person, they will more easily, this is my opinion, and I'm doing research to find out whether or not my opinion is right, they are more easily successful. So when Trump targets Cook, the rapid response that comes back are from civil rights coalitions like the NAACP, not from big bank CEOs. Not from G20 central bankers. Now, if Trump were to go after Powell, and he has tested the waters there to see what kind of response he'd get, he gets Wall Street chiefs like J.P. Morgan's Jamie Dimon. He gets global central bankers that are publicly defending Powell. It's an unmistakable signal of establishment pushback when he goes after Powell. But when he goes after Cook, you are not hearing from the establishment. It's like, she can be sacrificed. And the people that are going to support her are civil rights organizations, nonprofits, hundreds of signatures from these nonprofit social justice organizations who are not seen as powerful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also, you make the point in your article that Trump's war on DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion, these also factored into his targeting of Lisa Cook, correct?
Absolutely. I was saying that one of the first things that Trump did, he signed that executive order on January the 20th, getting rid of DEI. And then Elon Musk came in and began just firing hundreds, thousands of federal workers. It is a known fact that Black people and other people of color rely on jobs, federal jobs. They are more represented in the federal government than they are in the private sector. And so hundreds of thousands of people, mostly people of color, have been very vulnerable. And it's, and not to mention people that were employed specifically to conduct DEI programs across the nation, you know, private sector, in schools. All of these people have lost their jobs.
Well, what do you think it says about the broader stakes involved here in the effort to get rid of Lisa Cook? You know, I know it's all unfolding. We're trying to grapple with this in real time, but we really do appreciate your perspective. So what do you think on that?
Yeah. So, you know, I was telling you that I've been doing some research for a series of articles that I call it the establishing a foothold. And for me, what establishing a foothold means is that an opportunist wants to get in and their actions will negatively impact, in the end, everyone. But they start with the low-hanging fruit. And so in the end, what can happen with Trump's actions, if the courts continue to favor him, Trump will now have set legal precedent for going into an independent, congressionally approved organization and firing someone. And once that precedent is set, I think we all know where we go from there.
Yeah. Well, we do have just a few minutes left before we have to finish the hour again by doing some business. But there's been mentioned a couple of times of the LA Progressive, which you're the producer of. And of course, your husband, Dick Price, edits and what have you. And I mean, I read it every day, pretty much every day. Once in a while, I guess I miss it. I'm always amazed when I run into some progressive person around LA or just any thinking person who wants to know what's going on and not just take one side of the story. When I say the LA Progressive, they say, oh, well, yeah, I've heard of it, but I don't read it. What's the matter with people? I mean, I hate to say this, but I mean, if people don't even pay you money, you send the damn thing to them. I mean, they should subscribe. They should pay you some money. But talk to us a little bit about it. Talk to us. Explain to people. Let them know what a far reach your news magazine has.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you so much, Jim and Maria, for having me on here. Because one of the reasons, of course, I love talking to you guys, but the LA Progressive is a labor of love that my husband and I started 18 years ago. I had no idea that we'd still be, when we started 18 years ago, I had no idea that we'd still be doing this thing daily 18 years later. And it looks like we'll still do it 18 years longer if we're still alive. Yep. And the reason that we do this, and I say it's a labor of love, is because it's a way to educate people. Yep. I feel that a lot of my education comes from publishing, reading, editing the LA Progressive.
Right.
And people can access the LA Progressive by going to laprogressive.com. We have a podcast. We're all on social media, Facebook and all of the various others. And we encourage people. We don't have a paywall. We really want people to learn the way that I've learned. And I think that if we had an educated populace, we wouldn't even be in the situation that we're in right now with the Trump administration.
I think you're right. And I would just add to that really, listeners, I encourage you to just sign up LA Progressive and check it out before you decide whether you want to make a subscription. I think you'll be hooked as I was right away. I confess I've had some articles in it myself, but long before I ever had an article in it, I was a faithful reader of it because I was learning about LA. I was learning about all the progressive issues of the country and in the world. And it's got a lot of fancier writers than me in it every day.
So we appreciate the writings that you've contributed. Also, we do live events. So on October the 25th, we're going to be doing something that we call the Left Coast Forum.
That's right.
We partnered with Tavis Smiley of KBLA, and it's an all-day educational forum with keynote speakers like Cornel West and Professor Rick Wolf. And we're really excited about having an opportunity to be face-to-face with our community, talking to each other, networking with each other, and learning how we can be better progressives and establish the kind of government that we want.
Just another reason to be in touch with the LA Progressive, my friends. And Sharon, Kyle, thank you so much. I always admire your articles. Thank you so much for discussing one of them with us today. With respect to, it's been much in the news, the whole Lisa Cook matter. I think you explained it very well. And I thank you so much for joining us here today on the Lawyers Guild Show.
Thank you, Jim. And thank you, Maria. It's been a pleasure.
All right. Now, we do have just about 4 minutes left, I guess, before our time is up. So, friends, don't turn off the radio. Don't switch to another channel, another station. Stay with us, if you will, for a minute. As we remind you why it's so very important that you contribute now when we have these fund drives. I think we've spent so much, 5 minutes so far, I guess, of the whole show, maybe six. We're going to spend the last four. That's about it. 818-985-5735 is the number to call. We are in a moment in time in American history unlike any other, certainly any other of your lifetime or mine. Oh, there was the McCarthy period. There was, you know, the Civil War. I mean, obviously, there were great time, challenging times in American history. But in modern times, I can think of no period of time. We are in a pre-fascist, semi-fascist government already, authoritarian government, with Trump doing anything he damn well wants to do, with the Supreme Court giving him the right to do anything he damn well wants to do, with a jerry-rigged Congress, a gerrymandered Congress, and so forth and so on, with voting rights being denied to so many people. Where do you hear about the other side of the stories that are making your headlines in your newspapers every day? You can't count on the corporate media bring those other side of the story to you. They're not having Sharon Kyle on. They're not having Jeff Cohn on. They're not having our, you know, she mentioned Rick Wolf. Rick Wolf is recognized as the leading Marxist economist in the country today. We have him on the show periodically. We've had him on many times. He's not on CBS. He's not on ABC. He's not on CNN. It's here where you hear these alternative voices, as Amy Goodman says, speaking truth to power. But you're the only reason they're on. You're the only it's not because of me and Maria. We're only here because you allow us to be here. You allow us to be here when you contribute to the station at 818-985-5735. And when you do that, you're ensuring that the progressive movement in LA, the alternate voice to all the crap you're hearing every day on the corporate media, that that voice remains vibrant and alive and out there for people to listen to and hear. Maria, I know you always like to get the mugs. That's one of the ways we say thank you, isn't it? We've just got about a minute left. And you've silenced yourself.
Sorry, on mute. Yes. Yes, we only have 1 minute left. But yes, I do love my KPFK mugs. I love my KPFK t-shirts. Those are thank you gifts for $65. And it, you know, think about it as, what is that, you know, five cups of coffee? You know, come on, KPFK really needs it. We all need to put our collective resources together, you know, put our money where our mouth and our heart is, and, you know, keep this station alive. It's not a matter of if, it's when they're going to come after the FCC licensing of Pacifica and others. So we just have to stay strong. Yeah. And that's, we do it with money. We do it with moral support, financial support. So please give right now, kpfk.org. Please, please, please.
And when you do give us that little bit of money, I was saying there's that $130 to get this three CD collection, for example, mm-hmm. which, thank you this time, of Joni Mitchell's music. But when you do that, you feel much more invested in the station. So when they come after our license, you'll be one of those people out there in the streets marching with us as well. Well, our time is up. We'll be back with you, of course, again next week. Until then, this is Jim Lafferty and Maria Hall. Thank you for listening to the Lawyers Guild Show today, urging you to stay healthy. And as always, as the music's about to tell you, what? Stay strong, stay active, stand up for your rights, my friends.
Stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up, stand up for your right.
Support comes from UCLA's Center for the Art of Performance, presenting Joy Guidry on October 4th at the Nimoy. Guidry performs excerpts from her new album, Five Prayers. A celebrated voice in experimental and avant-garde music spaces, Guidry pairs the bassoon with low rumbling synths, warm electronic sounds, and poetry that reflects the artist's lived experience as a Black trans woman from the South. Further information and tickets available at cap.ucla.edu and KPFK.